Hope you're having a good weekend. I'm Tony Bruschi. Here's another Week in Review segment, some of our best segments of this last week. Want to weigh in on the topic at hand? You can call 24/7 888-5KILLER, 888-554-5537. Let's go to this segment.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
We are going to have an interesting conversation here with former Alameda Deputy District Attorney and experienced criminal defense lawyer, Lewis Goodman, joining us to talk about observations thus far on Alec Murdaugh. It's been an interesting 24 hours. Alec Murdaugh taking the stand yesterday in his own defense. Let's talk just strictly about that part. Him standing up for himself, admitting a lot of things. What's your take on what you saw?
First of all, let me say that I've been watching the direct testimony of the defendant. In other words, the testimony where Mr. Murtaugh's own attorney is taking him through the events of the day in question and the timeline leading up to that. Mm-hmm. And so far, I think that he's been a very impressive witness, which doesn't surprise me. I mean, the man is well educated. He's well spoken. He's an attorney. He's seen lots of witnesses on the stand, and I'm sure that his very competent legal team has done a lot of preparation with him in order for him to be as effective on direct as he is. I think, obviously, that the cross-examination is always what is very interesting for obvious reasons, because that's the thing that you can prepare for, but you don't know exactly what's coming.
Sure. What have you made of just watching Alec on the stand and his emotional reactions to various questions thus far?
I think that he's been very effective in communicating this. I don't know if I would call it folksy, but it's at the very least, he's demonstrated that he and his family are regular people, that they have dinner oftentimes in front of the television when they're in the house, the TV is on, he's in the house and doesn't want to go down to the dog kennel because it's very hot out, that he's a little overweight. I mean, these are things that pretty much everybody can relate to. Mm-hmm. He loves his wife. He loves his sons. He plays with his dogs. I mean, he comes across in his own testimony as someone who is, I wouldn't say a regular Joe, but I would say a regular upper middle class professional person living at home with his family.
Is the way he's talking on this, and the folksy, I think you're almost right on that, because the way he's talked that we've seen on video before, he doesn't refer to Paul as Pawpaw. There's a lot of things that have been almost, it seems, let's turn the volume up on this, of talk this way, refer to these people by all their nicknames, not by their actual names. Is that part of the defense here to make him feel to the jury like he's just one of them?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that any attorney has to do with any witness, and especially a defendant who's testifying, a dangerous position for any defendant to be in, is to humanize the client, mm-hmm. to humanize the witness, to humanize the defendant. And I think that so far, the defense has been very effective in doing that. I mean, I'm not an easy audience, but I have to say that so far I have been as positively moved by Mr. Murtaugh's own testimony than I have anything else I've seen in this trial.
Sure, sure. How much prep goes into something like this where we know he's going to go to the stand? His defense obviously knows he's going to the stand. Do they run through all this? Do they make cold runs at this the day before, the night before, or whatever, and just kind of coach him through these sort of things? Or is it, here's the questions we're going to ask, and you're a defense attorney, you already know what you're doing, so let's just, you know, wing it. I'm just curious as to the amount of prep that goes into something like this.
I don't think there's any winging it here.
No, I don't think so either. I just didn't know if it's more of a, well, we're confident in your abilities to perform on the stand. Are they practicing this? Was this all practiced prior?
I think that to some extent it's been practiced. And I think that probably the best evidence of that is how clearly the attorney knows which photograph he wants to show, which diagram. He says, well, I want to see state's exhibit 154. I want to see defense exhibit 125. And, you know, and they have someone bringing those up on the screen so that it flows. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing to do. I'm not saying it as a criticism. I'm saying that's what a really good lawyer does.
Sure.
Is they prepare their examination so that it moves along and they know what they're doing, they know where they're going, and they have their witness knowing what they're doing and knowing what they're going as well. And I don't think that that this is an attorney who does anything but really prepare for this kind of very critical examination. And I suspect that they have really worked with Mr. Murtaugh on his cross-examination, and they've had people come in to act as the prosecutor to ask the tough questions that are undoubtedly coming.
I'm curious. I want to make an observation here in what I've seen, and I'd like to get your feedback, and it could be just as simple as, well, this is how they prepared. He seems very genuine, and he seems very easy to ad lib some of the stuff that has nothing to do with the murder when it comes to talking about anything but the murder. You know, so-and-so down the road, they're really good at this and that, and here's how you catch a dog that has a chicken and all that. It's off the cuff. It's just kind of talking. But when they get down to the details of the actual murder and the time window there and where were you when and what happened here and what happened there, I've been noticing a demeanor change in him, in his delivery. The way I would describe it is between just ad-libbing something and reading a script. And I can hear it in him, almost as if, okay, when we're talking about the specific thing, here's exactly how he's going to answer. He knows exactly the words he's going to say. It's not a riff, if you will, as I think a lot of it is just kind of riffing. Have you noticed any of that? And that may just be, you know, like I said, they practiced for this and that's just how he is when he's delivering a scripted message.
I think that's certainly one take. It's a take that might very well be argued to the jury. On the other hand, you know, if you're going to in any way believe the defendant's testimony, you're going to say, well, if, you know, these particular things happened at these particular times, and this was his comment to 911 at this point, and you'll notice that they took him through that 911 tape literally second by second. I mean, and so those were things that I think anybody, if they did come upon the scene unknowingly of their wife and their son being dead on their own property, would be very distraught about. And I suspect that, let's just even play it the other way. Mm-hmm. Let's assume that he did kill them and he knew that he had killed them and he went to his mother's house as kind of a cover story, as the prosecution alleges. And then he comes back and he does go up to the scene and he sees what he has done and sees this dreadful scene in front of him. I think that even knowing what he was going to see would still have a very substantial effect on his emotional reaction to it.
How do you think it's going to play to the jury where he's flat out admitting today, I continued to lie, and the web of lies that he wove? If the jury is to believe that he did not kill his family, why should they believe that when he's lying immediately to everyone who's there trying to help, trying to get this investigation underway, and all he's doing is lying and lying to cover other lies and blaming it on drugs? That it's a very honest statement. I'll give him credit for that. I was almost wondering if he's going to come out and say, I think I shot them and I was on the drugs and I don't remember, but obviously that hasn't happened. But why should they believe him if he is this compulsive liar and he's already painted this horrible picture of all the lies that he's told in the past as well?
That, sir, is the $64,000 question. I don't know how that's going to play to the jury. If I were a juror, it would not play well to me. I mean, I've been very impressed with the testimony I've seen. I think he's come across as, we've sort of called it folksy. We've called it as kind of a regular person doing regular things. And I think that for 99.9% of his life, he has been a sort of regular person doing sort of regular things when he wasn't, you know, embezzling from his law firm or that sort of thing.
Covering up murders. And yes.
Yeah. But I mean, even people who embezzle and cover up murders sit on their couch and watch TV while they eat dinner. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's what you want to kind of present. And so I think that they have been effective in presenting that. I think I'm going a little off topic here, but can you refresh my recollection about your question?
But how does he have any credibility where I've lied about all this? I lied to the prosecutors. I've lied to my family. I've lied to my law firm about literally everything. But right now, when I'm sitting here and you're questioning me about the thing you're accusing me of, killing my wife and son, you have to believe me.
Like, now, huh? I'm telling you the truth. Yes. I'm telling you the truth here. Because I'm sitting here in court with the high ceilings and the American flags and the judge and
I'm calling my wife Megs and Papa, and everybody has a nickname, but that should make me more folksy. And I watch TV. I leave the TV on and let me talk about the dogs and how they catch chickens and how my, let's talk about Alzheimer's a little bit and everything else. It makes me seem like a human being, and I lie about everything, but not this. That's where it's at.
Well, I think you've just made the prosecution's closing argument.
I should go and just step in for a moment, but I don't know. I'm really questioning where this is going, because I agree. He's doing very good on the stand, I think. And it'd be very hard, I think, almost at this point. Do you think we're going to be getting a unanimous verdict here, a unanimous jury, or what? Where do you think this is going to go? Obviously we have Cross to listen to yet, but if we're just basing it on his performance thus far,
if you're only basing it on his performance,
yeah,
he gets an A for performance. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that gets him an NG at the end of the case.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
We got more still to come with Lewis Goodman, so be sure to press subscribe wherever you're downloading podcasts. You don't miss that. We're going to dive deeper into the case, dive deeper into some of the arguments that have been made, some of the admissions that have come out now, and take an even closer microscope to this circus that is the Alec Murdaugh trial. My name is Tony Bruschi. You can follow me on Twitter @TonyBPod. Stay with us.